नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 1st chapter, text number 34. Sri Yudhisthira Vacha Kidrisha Kasya Va Sapo Hari Dasa Bimarshanaha Ashradeya Ivabhati Harer Ekantinam Bhavaha Sri Yudhisthira Vacha Kidrisha Kashyava Sapao Hari Dasa Bimarshanaha Ashradheya Ivabhati Hareri Kantinam Bhavaha Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha Kidvisha Kashyava Sapo Haridasa Bimarshanaha Ashradheya Ivabhati Harere Kantinam Bhavaha Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha Kidrisha Kashyava Sapo Haridasa Bimarshanaha Ashradheya Ivabhati Harere Kantinam Bhavaha Vaishnavis. Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, Kidrishaha. What kind of? Kasha. Whose? Va. Or? Shapaha. Curse. Haridasa. The servant of Hari. Abhimarshanaha. Overcoming. Ashradheyaha. Incredible. Eva. As if. Abhati. Appears. Hare. Of Hari. Ekantinam. Of those exclusively devoted as exalted attendants. Bhavaha. Birth. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, what kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? And what sort of person could curse even the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord to fall again to this material world is impossible. I cannot believe this. Please repeat. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, what kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? Sorry, that's a full breath. And what sort of person could curse even the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord, to fall again to this material world is impossible. I cannot believe this. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 8:16, the Lord clearly states, Mam upetya tu kunteya punarjanma navijate. One who is purified of material contamination and returns home back to Godhead does not return to this material world. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tattvataha tvaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this mature world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was surprised that a pure devotee could return to this material world. This is certainly a very important question. Om Gyanat Manandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vancha Kalpa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha, Kirishaha Kasya Vasapo, Haridasa Bhimarsanaha, Ashradeya Ivabhati, Harir Ekantinam Bhavaha. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, what kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? And what sort of person could curse even the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord, to fall again to this material world is impossible. I cannot believe this. So this is a very important question, and this is going to open up a whole transcendental pastime describing how this is possible. And we know that nothing is possible without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, the whole cause of this was Krishna himself. We may think that the Kumaras were the cause because they cursed, but then we understand that actually Jayan Vijay One time they stopped Lakshmi from entering Krishna's room when he was sleeping so as not to disturb him. So she cursed them then. And then we may think that it was Lakshmi's fault, but actually Krishna admitted that actually it was my desire, because I have this desire to fight. And I'm not going to fight with anybody. I'm only going to fight with my devotees. So he wanted his devotees. He created a situation so the devotees can somehow or another leave this transcendental abode, which is unprecedented. It's completely spiritual. Once you go there, you never return. There's no sense of time. You know, there's no old age. Everything is conscious. You know, it's eternal. So how is it that one can come back from there? And this is the whole purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to help the conditioned souls get back there. This is our ultimate perfection. So once you achieve the ultimate perfection, how can you come back to this place which is full of darkness and ignorance, where everyone is forgetful of Krishna? We're influenced by the states of dreaming, you know, wakefulness, and deep sleep. And here we are speculating about who we are, what God is, you know, the purpose of life. And so this is why Krishna appears. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to purify these speculative conditioned souls. Even the great philosophers and the impersonalists, they speculate about what who God is or what Krishna is, and so many different ways like that. But Krishna appears in the form of this Krishna consciousness movement. And as Prabhupada hinted in this particular purport, that the whole purpose of Krishna is so that we can come and display himself, so that we can see him personally and not have to speculate about what God is. So when he comes personally and displays himself, it's so transcendental. Even though he appears to take birth, he doesn't have a mother or father, but yet Krishna takes birth. And supposedly he appears to disappear, but yet Krishna is eternal, he doesn't die. And while Krishna takes a body, his body is not like ours, that grows old and ages. Krishna appears to grow from a baby to a youth, no more than 16 years old. But yet, in the battle of Kurukshetra at that time, he had many grandchildren. And he was like over, I think he was 125 years old. But yet he appeared no older than 16 years old. So this is Krishna displaying himself so that we can become so attracted to him and go back to him. So this is, Krishna is an incarnation, and this is what the Krishna consciousness movement is about. Prabhupada said that Krishna has appeared in the form of this international society for Krishna consciousness to purify us. And Prabhupada quotes some very important verses in the purport. In the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita 16, that from the highest planet in the mature world down to the lowest, they're all places of misery, of repeated birth and death. So does these yogis, these gyanis, these different types of personalities, they're trying to achieve some perfection. But Prabhupada explains they cannot achieve perfection unless they come to bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness. So unless they come to Krishna consciousness, they can't go to Krishna's abode and never return back here. So they have to elevate themselves. Even if these great personalities elevate themselves to higher planets, if they don't make further progress there, then they come back. Even if you achieve Brahmaloka, it's described, if they don't attain Krishna consciousness, then they come back. So this is the whole purpose, is to gradually elevate ourselves out of this material world so that we never come back again. Prabhupada quotes another nice verse in this purport, that one who knows the transcendental nature of his appearance and activities, does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains his eternal abode. So we can see Krishna's appearance is amazing. Even though he appears to take birth, he's eternal. So these are like contradictory, you know, things about Krishna, because he's transcendental, he's spiritual. Even though he has many, many forms, he's still the one and the same. In fact, it's said that anyone who understands Krishna to be supreme, and he says to the Lord, "You are the same supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly. And consequently, the entrance into transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. So this is the faithful devotees. They want to take the association of the Lord. And this is the reason why Krishna comes, to display himself to his faithful devotees, to the sincere devotees, those who are eager to find out what their position is and understand that and to get out of it. So Krishna described in the Bhagavad Gita that although he's unborn and his transcendental form never deteriorates and is the Lord of all living entities, I still appear millennium after millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna is talking about his own birth here. It may seem like an ordinary person. He's had many births, but he can remember all of them, and we cannot. This is the difference between our birth and Krishna. And that every time we take birth, we have a different type of body. But Krishna, when he takes birth, it's the same transcendental body. Even though he may appear to take birth in different forms for different purposes and specific reasons, he can appear not only in human society, but in animal society, insect society, according to the time and circumstance, and according to the need or the consciousness of the souls. And as we mentioned, he never grows old. So this appearance is described like the analogy of the rising and setting of the sun. To our eyes, the sun may appear to be rising. And then to our eyes, the sun may appear to be setting on the other side. But the sun is in its own position. It doesn't rise or set. But to our perception, it appears to. So this is Krishna. He's unborn. And he has multi-manifestations. But yet, he is completely transcendental to all our material conceptions and speculations. And the reason why Krishna comes, it's described also in the Bhagavad Gita, that whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, that he comes to reestablish these. Because there's a predominant of irreligion, at that time he'll descend himself to reestablish religious principles. So the Lord comes and lays down principles of religion. They can only be given by the Supreme Lord himself, not by any man-made laws or any kind of speculations. But Krishna comes to establish the principles of religion. And this mission of the Lord is always the same. It's to lead the people to God conscious and obedience to the principles of religion. So sometimes he'll come personally. Sometimes he'll send his bona fide representatives or his son. Or sometimes in some disguised form. But it's always the mission is the same. Is to help the conditioned souls. You know, as Prabhupada mentions, the whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only under different circumstances. So these principles of religion were described by Dharmaraj to, was Yamaraj to the Yamadutas. And he was explaining to them how these religious principles are established by the Supreme Lord again. It is also confirmed again that we just read from the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. So this ultimate religious principle is given by Krishna. He comes to display himself, and the living entities, the conditioned souls, they're so enamored by Krishna that they want to glorify him. They want to speak about his pastimes. They want to always remember him, you know, his beautiful form, his amazing pastimes. So this is where it starts, is by glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is where the principles of religion are, and it's described that there's no cheating propensities in the Bhagavatam. And it teaches everyone how to love God. So this is real religious principles. There's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita which says, Mam upeta punarjanma dukhalayam asasvatam napnuvanti mahatmanaha samsirim paramam gata. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. So if this highest perfection, it's described in the Brahma Samhita, how it's also again describing, as we mentioned, where Krishna, he's exhibiting his pastimes. And sometimes he displays these in the mature world, where he appears to take birth, you know, even though he's without beginning. You know, he's still eternal. He's without origin, and he's always youthful. But the substance that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says here is that though he possesses diverse and apparently mutually contradictory qualities, still there are in universal harmonious concordance by dint of his unthinkable potency. So this is what is meant by chid dharma, his transcendental nature, as distinguished from material. So in that transcendental realm, there's no past or future, but only unalloyed and immutable present time. So in the transcendental sphere, there's no distinction between the object and its qualities, and no such identity is found in the limited mundane region. So we're getting a difference here between this mundane world and the spiritual world. So how is it that the jiva can realize this unprecedented existence? And Lord Brahma was saying how it's possible that one can. And let's see what he says here. He says that the transcendental absolute truth is beyond the reach of the Vedas. The Vedas originate in sound, and sound originates in the mundane ether. So the Vedas cannot present before us a direct view of the transcendental world, Goloka. It is only when the Vedas are imbued with the chit potency that they're enabled to deal with the transcendental. So here, we're the jiva is always contaminated by this influence of time and space. So how is it that we can shake off this limitedness? And here it's described, it's not by the Vedas alone, but they have to be imbued with this chit potency. And it goes on to describe here, but Goloka reveals itself to every jiva soul when he's under the influence of the spiritual cognitive potency joined to the essence of ecstatic energy. The ecstatic function of devotion is boundless and is surcharged with unalloyed transcendental knowledge. That knowledge reveals Goloka Tattva, the principle of the highest transcendental, in unison with devotion, without asserting itself separately, but as a subsidiary to unalloyed devotion. So here we're getting the clue how it's not by knowledge alone. Even Prabhupada was mentioning in a lecture that you can't just go and start reading books and think that you'll become self-realized. But one has to actually have this devotion. He has to have this love for Krishna. And that devotion is shown by engaging oneself in devotional service. And when one engages oneself in devotional service, then automatically this chit potency comes as a result of that devotional service. So this is displayed by the devotees even. Krishna comes to display himself, and the devotees also display how they are always engaged in this devotional service. One time, the Pandavas went to go visit Krishna. And Krishna greeted them very nicely. And out of etiquette, Krishna says to King Yudhisthira, "How is your welfare? You know, how's everything?" You know. So King Yudhisthira is very happy that he was addressed by Krishna like this. And he explained to him, "My dear Lord, there's great personalities and devotees in full Krishna consciousness. They always think of your lotus feet, and they remain fully satisfied by drinking the nectar of transcendental bliss." And that nectar, which they're constantly drinking, it sometimes comes out of their mouth and it's sprinkled on others as they narrate your transcendental activities. And this nectar that's coming from the mouth of the devotees is so powerful that if one is fortunate to hear it, then he's immediately freed from the continuous journey of birth and death. So it's very powerful how we see the devotees. Just this, the activities of Krishna are so powerful that not only are you directly seeing them or you directly hearing, reading them yourself, but by hearing from the mouths of the devotees, they're always drinking this ecstatic, nectarine bliss. And sometimes it sprays out on others by their speaking. So this is the Krishna consciousness movement. And this is what Prabhupada did. He came. He had so much nectar that he distributed it to all of us. And we become, if we follow this, his teachings, take up this nectar, lick it up and drink it up, and follow it to heart, then we will also become, as it said here, we'll be fortunate enough to end this journey of birth and death. And Yudhisthira goes on to say, "Our material existence is caused by our forgetfulness of your personality. But fortunately, the darkness of forgetfulness is immediately dissipated if one is privileged to hear about your glories. Therefore, my dear Lord, where is the possibility of ill fortune for one who is constantly engaged in hearing your glorious activities? And since we're surrendered to you and have no other shelter than your lotus feet, we're always confident of our good fortune. My dear Lord, you're the ocean of unlimited knowledge and transcendental bliss." So he went on to say how, you know, the reactions that we have in this material world from these three phases of material life, wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep, they can't exist in Krishna consciousness. All those reactions are invalidated by Krishna consciousness. So see, also, we're not even going to get the reactions of this material existence if we're always engaged in Krishna consciousness, absorbed in his transcendental pastimes. And this is also confirmed again when Yudhisthira was talking with Krishna and Krishna went and met other people that came to visit him. The queens were there also, and Draupadi approached the queens and she began to ask, she was curious about Krishna and his pastimes. And she asked all the different queens, "How did you meet Krishna and how is it that you married Krishna?" So they all began to explain how they met Krishna, And it was because they're always thinking of Krishna. They're always thinking in their heart that I wanted to marry Krishna. And they're explaining how they were always heard about Krishna somehow, and that they wanted to marry Krishna, and they were thinking about him. And then Rohini came, and Draupadi asked her. She actually came as representing all the 16,000 queens that Krishna married. And she said, how did you become queens of Krishna? And she was telling Queen Draupadi. She said that when Bhumasura was conquering the world, he collected wherever possible all the beautiful girls and daughters of the kings and kept us arrested in his palace. And then when that news appeared, when Krishna heard this, he actually came and killed this Bhumasura and all his soldiers. And then he had no need to accept us as his wife, but then he married all 16,000 of us. And she said, my dear Queen Draupadi, our only qualification was that we're always thinking of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, which is a way to release oneself from the bondage of repeated birth and death. So that was their only ambition. They just wanted always thinking of Krishna's lotus feet. And they wanted the dust particles of his feet on their head constantly. They're saying even the goddess of fortune always wanted the dust of his feet on her head. Even though his lotus feet, it's described here that the goddess of fortune also desires to keep that dust on her breasts along with fragrant saffron. We simply desire this dust which accumulates underneath the lotus feet of Krishna as he travels on the land of Vrindavan. As a coward boy, the gopis especially, and also the coward men and the aborigine tribeswoman, also desire to become the grass and straw on the street of Vrindavan, to be trampled on by the lotus feet of Krishna. My dear queen, we wish to remain as such, life after life, without any other desire. So these are the devotees. Their only desire is to just think and be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. This is the nectar of devotional service. And from that, all this knowledge about Krishna and his pastimes and his appearances and things like this is what helps us become free from this material world and never have to return here again. So I'd like to end there. If there's any comments or questions. Yes, Bhrigu Padipu.
Thank you, Boo, for a very informative, interesting, and inspiring class.
Thank you.
I have a question. What's the correct understanding? Is the correct understanding that it's impossible for a living entity to fall back into the material world? Or that it's so highly unlikely, you know, the chances being just about negligible. So in that sense, you know, in what sense are we saying that once the living entity goes back to the spiritual world, he doesn't come back again?
Right.
In the sense that it's absolutely really impossible, or that it's, you know, the chances are so small, practically negligible. So in that sense, he doesn't return. What's the correct understanding?
Yes, I think that's the correct understanding, because the living entity, he still has his free will. So he may be, you know, after he experiences the material world, it's very, even more unlikely that he would want to come back, because it'd be like a bad dream. And who wants to go back into a bad dream? But still, he has that free will. He might wonder, he might, you know, think, oh, I didn't try that when I was there. Maybe I just wonder how that is. So then, there you go, down the drain to the material world. Yeah, but otherwise, we're finding in this pastime that it's Krishna's desire that he wants to, as he incarnates, he also wants his devotees to incarnate, so he makes kind of a situation. And then from that situation, there's so many lessons we can learn about devotees, how we should treat devotees, and, you know, things like that. Yes?
You said, this in Bhagavad Gita statement, that the same personality of Godhead, you are the same personality of Godhead. When they said like that, then they will be immediately liberated.
You have the mic too close to your mouth.
Okay.
Can you put it farther so I can understand?
Devotee, they can say like, you are the same personality of Godhead, Krishna. And in that time, when they said like that, they will be liberated. Mm. So my question is, what this kind of liberation are, and why devotee they still have problem? Maybe they said sometimes like that, but they have problem. They are not fixed, or so how can you understand that?
So, where that verse I read, where it says that if one just says that you are the Supreme Lord, that you're liberated immediately. And then why is it that the devotees, even though they may say that and they're liberated, they still have problems?
No, I don't ask where is this in Bhagavad Gita and Purport somewhere. I read it.
Yeah.
Only my question is, what kind of liberation is that? And also another one is, what does it mean, liberation? Another one is, why they after that they have problems. They have problems. They're not fixed. So how you say they're liberated? They have problems and they fall down and... some of them that fall down, maybe. Or so what does it mean?
Yeah, that's quite a topic. We can discuss that.
How can you say just in some few,
we know
what's your insight?
Kinds of liberation, and because they have problems doesn't mean that they're not liberated. We have problems. Devotees of Pandavas had problems. Depends what kind of problems. But if you're saying they fall down into sinful activities, yes, that's still the free will there. But doesn't mean that they can't lift themselves back up still. So it's a constant struggle once you're here, and then eventually when you get out of here, then hopefully that won't happen again. Yes?
My question kind of goes along the same lines as the first one, and I've been grappling this for a while. And I think what is, please correct my misunderstandings, but being born in the human body is auspicious and rare because it's here that we have the opportunity to go home back to Godhead and to understand Krishna.
Sure.
That implying where we started was in the eternal abode. And because of our free will, we come back to the material world. So is it that when we go back, as long as our free will or our desires are eternal, that we'll stay there eternally? But if we desire to come back, we will?
Yeah, you have the free will.
Okay.
But it's very unlikely because you'll be so much in love with Krishna and so much absorbed in him and experiencing the transcendental bliss and ecstasy that why would you want to give that up?
Why would we fall in the first place?
Because we are a part and parcel of Krishna. Mm. We are in quality the same as Krishna. And Krishna is free. He has free will. So we have that free will. But it's very minute. And by misusing that, we come here.
Okay.
It's the misuse of that minute free will that we have. Krishna can't force us to stay. He can't force us to love him. We have to make that choice. And once you make that choice, and you experience the result of that choice, it's unlikely that you'll want to give that up again.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. You have a question? Okay.
You know how many times we fell down from the spiritual world? Just once?
I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. But it's not important, Prabhupada said. The most important thing is how to get out of here. Don't worry about how you got here, but let's get out of here. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. All glories to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna.